From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Well, if you were just listening to the president, you heard him talking about gun control. He was also asked about the debt ceiling. Today is, of course, the one-month anniversary of the Newtown, Connecticut tragedy. So gun control is big in the headlines. Vice President Biden is going to be presenting all of his gun recommendations to the president tomorrow. And he told reporters there today that he'd be releasing those recommendations later this week. Of course, it's also been a lot of movement on that front here, too, in Massachusetts. Representative David Linsky has come up with stricter gun control proposals here in Massachusetts. We're going to be talking to him in just a little while. Meanwhile, I am joined here in the studio by Jeffrey Berry, a professor of political science at Tufts University, and Garrett Quinn, author of the blog Less Is More on Boston.com. Welcome to both of you.
How are you?
Thanks for having us.
I mean, we can't start talking politics without the real politics of the week, of course, is the Patriots. I mean, we were just saying off air how robotic almost this has become for Bill Belichick and for Brady in a sense. I mean, like, just unflappable, the two of them. No reaction. None.
Yeah, you know, Belichick, I'd love to see Bill Belichick play poker because he just has – the guy has – ice water running through his veins. But even when it's a positive outcome, he shows no emotion.
Yeah.
And I was talking with friends earlier about this, and he in a lot of ways, he reminds me of Alabama's head coach, Nick Saban. The guy lives for just the process.
Yeah.
And the outcome is almost secondary, to, it seems like, this pursuit of excellence, and then that's it. This is his entire life. I know he loves Bon Jovi and other things, but he just... The guy shows no emotion one way or the other. You know, it's. I think this has happened actually as his career has progressed, because he wasn't always this totally robotic.
Stoic,
it just seems like he's become more and more stoic, even in his press conferences, where he's just so frequently gives one or two or three word answers.
He has all these tics that he's developed too. He goes, before he speaks.
That is what it is. Yeah.
It's bizarre.
I wonder if other coaches are really intimidated by him. You think of the psychology of it. And would you like to be playing against a Bill Belichick football team? I wouldn't. I
mean,
he's a little frightening.
It's never hurt Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin's the only guy who's really been able to crack that code. And
Right now, Tom Coughlin's going to be watching the Super Bowl at home. So.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder how long Belichick stays.
But where does he go, Garrett?
Home.
Retires.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, what else could he do?
Oh, the competitive juices are flowing. You know, I just don't know how you step away from that. I think
till it forever.
Yeah,
he's the longest.
How long has he been doing it?
He's got to be the longest. Has he been there longer than Coughlin? He's had to.
Yes.
I think he's the longest coach in the NFL by far, right? I think by far.
Yeah. I think
at the same team.
Yeah.
How long has he been at the Patriots?
At least 10 years, I think.
Oh, gosh. Probably. When did he came? Was it 2000 and. When did he come over from the Jets? Remember that big debacle? Because he signed with the Jets for a day, and then he left. I can't remember which year it was.
Somebody Google that.
Yeah.
All right. On to the more mundane. Well,
right. Politics. Now for the less important stuff.
So it looks like the governor is, as we speak, it's holding a press conference, doing something about this $8 billion deficit that the Transportation Department has racked up. I never understood that, how the T could be $8 billion. It doesn't seem... You know, I always ask that question, like, how am I going to get $8 billion in debt? Nope. People aren't paying the fare. I mean, even anything.
It's all the people jumping over the turnstile.
Well, I think it's a bit exaggerated, because part of that is the debt they incur when they buy equipment, and that's bonded and it's going to pay it off over time. But there isn't.
Came to the Patriots as head coach in 2000. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
13 years.
But there is an operating deficit in terms of how much it costs to run the T in terms of revenue.
I don't think any – I don't believe any public transit system in the entire world and I can't remember when this was dated, but I know – I think there's like some transit system in Korea is like the only one in the world that breaks even solely on revenue generated from ridership. Everybody runs a deficit and requires some public funding to sustain it. It's got to be probably the most challenging job in the world to be the general manager of the T. And it's also probably the most thankless job in the world.
You know, like, talk to
everybody hates you even if things work and run on time and work properly. And
we were talking to Beverly Scott the other day, the new person. I get confused with the titles. I don't know what her title is, but she's not general manager but something else. She was saying that she was in New York when they had all their financial woes, and basically they had a $12 billion infusion into the system, and that's what kick-started it. But I mean, where do you get $12 billion?
Well, they're not going to find it in revenues here. So they don't. Fortunately, they don't need $12 billion, but they probably do need to increase the subsidy by a billion or so just for the operating losses that they incur. The fact of the matter is that they don't charge people enough. They don't charge people for what the service costs. And they're hesitant to do that because there's political cost to imposing the financial fee on riders. So and that's really a dilemma that they face.
I think there's one thing, too, people always have to keep in mind, I think, when we go into this discussion, is the issue of overexpansion of the TE. You look at the costs and the debts and the shortfalls they're facing right now. That's just from operating expenditures. That's just from maintaining the system as is. That isn't from improving it and making necessary repairs and renovations as it expansions in a lot of cases. Look at the expansion to the Greenbush line. Look at the Silver Line project. I understand, that was forced by the big dig. There's a lot of questions that need to be raised, and I think expansion of the T is definitely one that's brought on a lot of these debts, and management too, certainly. But
expanding can also be a way to it can grow the debt, but it can also grow. I mean, like, you can't get on public transportation to where we are right now, and this is the city of Boston.
Yeah,
where we are, you cannot get here.
Yeah,
right. There's a fundamental question, and this 89% of Massachusetts residents live in eastern Massachusetts. So, do you want us in a very dense areas? So, do you want a system where people and products move slowly around that metropolitan area? Do you want a system where they move quickly? Obviously, you want them to move quickly. So that means expanding the T and other means of mass transit, which we are doing very slowly, the expansion of the Green Line. And it does stimulate the economy. The question is, at what rate does it stimulate the economy? The underlying sort of urban politics and urban economics of this is something called smart growth, where the assumption is if you build out your system, those new areas then become spots where businesses locate and apartment buildings go up and people reduce their footprint in terms of the environment. So there's a lot of good reasons for it to happen. Mm-hmm. Question, of course, is it's very, very expensive.
So the last time the governor floated this idea of a gas tax, I think it was 19 cents. And the last time it happened, it was 1991. I think it was 21 cents.
But yes.
I mean,
there's a 2.5 cent additional fee that's tied to fuel cleanup and things like that too. And so the actual total you end up paying is like 23.5 cents.
Right. And unlike Bill Belichick, that was a different governor.
Yeah, right. That was Weld, I think. But I mean, is that the fairest way to go? Is a gas tax the fairest way to go? Most people who drive don't take the T.
Right.
The roads are actually facing a deficit too. Let's keep that in mind as well. The Mass Highway, they're facing a deficit too. I think of about $240 million, according to that study from Northeastern. I really don't know what the most appropriate way is to fund this because. You can't just let the system fall apart. They're shutting down, I think, Government Center in a couple of years because that station, that hub, I think it's next year they shut it down for 2 years to just totally.
Which means it'll be 4 years.
To totally knock it to the ground. But if you go in there, it is falling apart and rusting. I just I'm not a transportation policy analyst. I don't know what the solutions are to these things, but I know that. When it comes to the T, just from riding it and looking at it, it is in rough shape.
In terms of a tax, if you assume you have to increase revenue, which I think is fair, there's a lot to be said for a gas tax as opposed to other kinds of taxes. It is a user fee on people who drive. It by raising the cost of gasoline, you push people toward smaller cars and, right, Garrett, and you also push them toward mass transit. So if I was going to choose a tax – I would choose that one.
You would,
and he has. He also, from a political standpoint too, the governor has. This is his final term in office because he's made it pretty clear he's not going to run again. He's got nothing to lose by pushing for this. He really doesn't. We'll see what the reception is like in the legislature, but he has nothing to lose from a political standpoint as far as this taking him down in a re-election campaign or something like that. He can push this all he wants again. He has nothing
he
to
made
fear.
It sound like he wasn't going to go for a gas tax last week when somebody pressed him. He said, hey, I tried that once before. It didn't work. So, I don't know. All right.
It's still unpopular, too. There was a poll. The Lowell Sun just pushed
of course. Well, anything like that's going to be unpopular. Yeah. It's Monday. This is Politics as Usual. I'm joined here in the studio by Garrett Quinn, author of the blog Less is More on Boston.com, and political science professor Jeffrey Berry from Tufts University. All right, moving along to the Senate race. It's slow starting. That's because John Kerry hasn't officially stepped down or been named Secretary of State. So some names are still kind of floating around. Ed Markey is definitely in. Don't know about Michael Capuano yet, although it's looking less and less likely. And then did you all say this criticism this morning? Mike Monahan, he's the business director for the Electrical Workers, calling Markey a really weak candidate. And then he was saying how his union, which has 7,500 members, supported Elizabeth Warren and Martha Coakley, and that now for them to ask them to support Markey didn't make any sense to me at all. What the beef was, other than saying he's a weak candidate, I don't happen to agree with him.
Well, his war chest says something completely different. He has three times, I believe, the amount of money that anybody else in the potential candidates. He has something over $3 million in the bank. I'll be surprised if Lynch gets in the race. I'll be very surprised if the construction trades don't all immediately line up behind him due to his history.
Status.
Yeah, his status as an iron worker and as a guy who's been there and done that.
Does it matter that much?
Does what?
The union people?
Well, I think, you know, they give you foot soldiers, they give you resources, they give you a network to tap into. In a Democratic primary, sure. You know, the two biggest the unions play a huge role in that.
I agree with you, Emily. I think Capuano has been marginalized and he's probably not going to run. The National Democratic Party might as well have put up a billboard on the Southeast Expressway saying Michael Capuano, we do not want you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's clear that Markey's going to have all the money that he needs. He's going to have all the big-name Democrats come and campaign for him in a primary if there is a primary. Democrats understand that if there is a bloody primary, their chances of taking the seat are a lot slimmer. So they have gathered around Markey. They said, this is our guy. And I think it's going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Ben Downing also just got bowed out of the race because he didn't think he could raise the money. And Lynch on Channel 5 this weekend noted that one of the things that he was concerned about, again, was the huge amount of money that would be required to raise – that he would have to raise to get in this race, because I think Brown and Coakley in 2010, they raised, I think, around $20 million. I forget exactly what the amount of money was spent.
A big difference between
has $700,000, by the way, I think, in his campaign.
A big difference between Markey and the other two candidates is he has access to corporate money in terms of political action committees because of his service on the Energy and Commerce Committee, which
and telecommunications.
Telecommunications falls under that committee. That's a subcommittee of it. And he chaired that. You're right. He chaired that subcommittee for a long time. So he can get PAC money where I think these other two, you know, really limited in terms of PAC money to unions.
Hmm. Warren has also stayed out of this. She has.
I know
some of her staffers are getting her former staffers are getting behind Markey, but she is not, unlike Kerry, she is not pointed in favor of any candidate yet.
But I bet she down the road shares her mailing list and provides any kind of assistance she can once it's settled.
Yeah, I mean, Markey just hired her Sarah Benzing, a Democratic strategist, as his campaign manager. Then two other Warren fundraisers, Michael Pratt and Colleen Coffey. They raised $42 million for Warren. So
The State Democratic Party brought on Doug Rubin and Kyle Sullivan to work in the general. They are not going to be hired guns this primary. They are not getting in the mess of a potential of a contested primary, which I find very interesting because in 2010 they did not. But those are the two of the biggest names in mass politics and staying out of the Democratic primary. That's big.
So what's your bet, Garrett? Is the governor going to name Barney Frank as the interim senator?
I don't know. I don't know who he'll end up picking. Barney Frank certainly wants it. And that would be interesting to say the least if Senator Frank for a little while would be I don't know. He's kept his cards pretty close to his chest and who he's going to nominate, who will name. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a former Kerry staffer.
Really?
If it's somebody that's
somebody
not
benign.
Some very benign apolitical figure.
If I was the governor, I would not appoint Barney Frank. He's embarrassed the governor. He's put him on the spot. That what he communicated to the governor should have been done in private rather than public. If I was the governor, I'd be a little angry.
But since when has Barney Frank been one to sort of play by?
Never.
Not,
no, you're right about
to
that.
Not
never.
Just go out there and
he doesn't know the meaning of the word appropriate.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. I don't know if that'll annoy the governor that much. I mean, presumably they had a conversation.
Yeah.
And then you got to assume that Barney Frank said, well, I'm going to lobby for this. You know, he probably told him. You know?
I'm going to go on Morning Joe
yeah.
and tell the whole world
right.
that I want to be the next senator in Massachusetts. Right.
For 3 months.
If he doesn't get it, he should just run for the Senate just for the heck of it.
Are we going to miss him or what?
He's a hoot. I didn't think I had arrived as a journalist till he told me I asked him a stupid question.
He never had the.
And it was a it was a simple
you
question
told
too.
Me that
it was
a
after
times.
A debate. I said, "How do you think it went in there? What do you mean? How do I think it went in there?" I was like,
"Yeah, yeah, I know." He could just be brutal, brutal. All right. So over the weekend, yet another profile of Mayor Menino. This time focusing on the Parkman House. It's like, you know, any way to get at the mayor here, you know. So they do a profile on the Parkman House, but really what they're doing is seeing how well the mayor can walk.
Right. Yeah. That was the subtext of it, wasn't it?
It really was.
That he had to have some place where he can move around, and they were very detailed in where he moved, what rooms
yeah,
he used,
exactly.
and how he got around. So I think you're right about that, that it was, in a way, featuring his inability to walk yet.
Also, they were making it sound like the Parkman House is really nice. It's not. It's a horror.
The picture that the Globe ran.
They showed it to him compared to his. What does he call his camp?
Chesterfield.
But you're right. That picture. Is that his home or is that the Parkman House? I mean,
the Parkman House is one with all that floral wallpaper and you know somebody tacked on this like 1950s style kitchen in the back, and the mayor used to have Christmas parties there, so you know we'd wander around and look at it, and you know awful furniture. I guess there are a couple of nice portraits hanging around and stuff. But
who was the last mayor to actually live there? Is anybody actually?
Didn't you read the profile?
I did, but I can't remember.
I can't remember
who it was. Yeah,
it was.
It was in paragraph 39. We never got there.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen there? I mean, he's going to.
He's going to probably wait about him. He's going to let us know. He's going to take it. He'll probably take his sweet time before he says he's going to get in to run. And everybody's going to wait on bated breath and what's going to happen before anybody makes any decisions. You have the potential for this mayoral campaign to be really exciting. If he stays out, you'll have the floodgates will open with candidates. Or if he stays if he doesn't get in, it'll be some sacrificial most likely it'll be some sacrificial lambs because
right.
they'll just his clout will probably intimidate people from running.
Even at this point, infirmities and ailments, you think?
Yeah, I do. Even with his infirmity, I think he's unbeatable. He's beloved in the city of Boston. He's credited with the city's revival. He's seen as effective. And people like his mumbling and, you know, sort of everyday Joe kind of demeanor.
Again,
he's unbeatable.
It just worries me. I mean, there's definitely been a change.
Yeah.
You know, people
he's
have
aged.
Seen him
No,
since,
you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. He's aged.
And, you know, I mean.
I can't remember the survey. But I think it came out in 2000 when he ran against Flaherty and Yoon that something like 75% of city residents said they had met or shook the mayor's hand.
Yeah.
That's astounding.
Right.
That's astounding. Mm-hmm. To have that type of outreach.
Every night he is at a community meet or community meetings. I mean, he makes it his business to meet those people. It didn't happen by accident.
And they're the most mundane things. They could be spaghetti dinners, and he'll just show up and say hi to everybody.
Right, just neighborhood things.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's been almost 4 months, though, since
his wife would probably be the biggest factor in whether he runs again or not.
Yeah,
if she says no.
My guess is he's going to go for it no matter what.
Certainly signaling that.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't the state of the city, is it this week or next week?
The state of the state is this. State of the state's
so
Wednesday.
Maybe the state of
the
city
the state
is.
Of season.
Well, it's coming up, and the question is he going to be able to, you know, walk on stage and stand there for an hour and, you know.
Yeah, he should be getting to the point at which where he can walk. I mean, he's been undergoing physical therapy for a long time, and it's clear there's been some improvement.
Yeah, and exactly. They haven't made it clear why is it that he can't walk.
Yeah.
Was it from that back issue or there's no clarity about this
right.
at all.
Well, politicians are never candid about their health. So,
no. Well, he had been in the past. This is the first time I feel like we're not getting the whole story.
Well, this one's threatening his political viability. So, I mean, it makes sense that he's hiding things. I assume he's hiding facts about his health care.
Maybe
health
other
condition.
Things too.
Yes.
Just, right?
Right. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, at some point that's going to come tumbling out. That's my guess anyway. I mean, you can hide it just so long. Right? I mean, if you've had a mini stroke or something like that, you know.
I guess. I don't... You know, I think in some ways with the mayor, he's been there for so long. This is in some ways uncharted territory, I think, for a guy who's developed, who's built this immense clout that the city hasn't seen arguably ever from a politician. So I don't know. It's hard to say, but I think I don't even know if his health really could stop him from running again.
Yeah,
And the other thing is he doesn't have any aspirations for higher office.
He
just wanted to be mayor of Boston.
Right.
And that's
he doesn't care about making money.
He doesn't care. This is all he wants to do. Like, what would he do in his free, like, he'd just be bored.
Yeah. I mean, he could.
I mean, and you know the schedule. You've seen the profiles of the schedules he runs as mayor. They're tireless. They're exhausting. And it's I think he almost would be afraid to not be mayor anymore.
One of the interesting things looking ahead is to the day where he doesn't run is that Boston is now a minority-majority city. And whether or not minorities can coalesce around one candidate, if they can, they can elect the next mayor, the first minority mayor of Boston. Mm-hmm. And that will be quite a transformation from the city that was dominated by the Irish and dominated by Italians to have a Hispanic or African-American or Haitian or Dominican mayor.
And there's a lot of prospective candidates
like
that could
who?
Fill that.
Oh, Alyssa Presley.
Ariana Presley.
Ariana.
Sonia Chang.
Excuse me.
Sonia Chang Diaz. Tito
yes.
Jackson.
Yes.
Felix Arroyo. There's plenty of potential. You know, those would be the four top names. I would think.
Linda Darcy Nifori, maybe.
Yeah, I think. She certainly should. Nifori could certainly be in there. I think. Ariana Presley, I think, is a real appealing candidate. She seems
in a lot of ways.
She has a lot of pizzazz. She has, she has a lot of ties to not just city Democrats, but state Democrats. She could probably pull in a lot of money. She's very charismatic. She's great. And Tito Jackson, too, would be another real interesting.
Sure.
Yeah, Tito, definitely Felix Arroyo. You know, I don't think Yancey would probably.
No.
Run, but you have a lot of interesting potential mayoral candidates there. You know, you can't forget Marty Walsh. The potential number of candidates for a open seat for mayor are just it's mind boggling. It would be, I can't even fathom how many people would get in that
real
race.
Real free for all. Yeah.
It would be.
You really think so?
I think everybody and their brother would jump in on that.
Initially. And then there's a weeding out before you get to the election when people can't
raise
the
money. I think a
lot
of people would seriously look at it, but I wouldn't be surprised if you had a ballot that was filled with 7 to 10 serious, legitimate contenders for mayor.
I think that's I agree with that. And the interesting thing is that all those people that are waiting to run can't do anything right now.
No.
You know, they just are frozen in place.
They're frozen. And no one will dare be critical. No one will
say
one thing about
that's
the mayor,
exactly
not
right.
even
yeah.
right. not even questioning whether he's being truthful about
right.
his health, for instance.
Exactly.
We wish the mayor well. I mean, it's just, you know, there's absolutely no. Yeah, I tried to get.
They're bringing casseroles to his house.
Yeah, exactly. Steve Murphy was having none of it. He was just elected, of course, council president again. But I spoke to him on the phone. I said, well, you know, if the governor offered you Suffolk County Sheriff, you know, would you take that? And I thought he was being very honest. He says, you know, I don't know. There was a time he would have jumped at that because obviously he ran for sheriff against Andrea Cabral. But he seems pretty happy where he is.
Yeah, I know he's run for a handful of offices for sure. But I wonder actually how many people, you know, the number of city councilors that could actually mount serious candidacies for mayor versus the ones who could. I don't. You know, Mike Ross would be an interesting one. I don't know if his district, because since he's a district, I don't know if he would be able to to mount you know, mount one, as opposed to somebody like Presley, who is a at-large city councilor. Now, again, it would be I'll put it this way, it would be a lot of fun to see that many serious people running for office to cover that. That would be,
considering we haven't had a mayor's race in 16 years.
Well, the Flaherty Union race was pretty. Yeah. That was the biggest challenge Menino's ever faced, I'd say, from Flaherty. And
whatever happened to him? He kind of fell off the face.
He ran again for council and lost. Yeah, I forget where he placed. I think he placed sixth.
Really?
I think. Don't quote me on that. I think he placed sixth.
But State of the City, by the way, is January 29th.
So
he's got a couple more weeks to pull himself together. This is Monday, and it's politics as usual, talking to Garrett Quinn from Boston.com and Jeffrey Berry from Tufts University. Well, as long as we're talking races, might as well get into the governors as well. I believe Governor Patrick when he says he's not running for re-election. He says he's not running for any office. I have this running bet going with Charlie Trippio, who says, I'm telling you, he's running for president. He's not running for president.
He might be running for attorney general, because I don't think Holder's going to last four more years. And so a year from now or 2 years from now, it's easy to imagine.
When he finishes his...
Yeah, it's easy to imagine him being nominated by Obama as attorney general.
But let's see, Obama would have...
But that's not a launching pad for running for president, because you can't run while you're serving as attorney general
Governor has three more years on his term. So it's like... He's running for attorney general. He can only
two more years.
Two more.
We just had an election.
Yeah.
Okay.
2010. After 2014, he'll be out. Yeah.
All right. So two more years. Yeah. So you're right. He could finish out 2 years of an attorney general.
I don't think he's going to run right away. I think he's going to go out and he's going to make some serious money after being governor.
I think he has some pretty serious money.
You can never have enough serious money. But that's an interesting idea if he becomes the next attorney general later on in President Obama's term. That moves up Tim Murray to be acting governor. I'm saying it's an interesting theory. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I found Dan Winslow, by the way, a potential interesting candidate in 2014.
He just put out some campaign like video. Norfolk Representative Dan Winslow. He just put out some video. Did you see that?
Yeah, he's always sort of hinted at this higher aspirations for higher office, whether it's the governor's office or something.
He's very likable. He's charismatic too.
He's very charismatic. He knows he's a very good self promoter. He's very good at that. He's somewhat of a thorn in the side of some Republicans because of his outspokenness and sort of his willingness to.
He's quite brash, independent, brash, but he's developed a good reputation in the state legislature.
Yes.
Somebody who's a real thinker,
he's original,
is willing to be bipartisan, and would be an interesting race if Charlie Baker and he both entered. I think Baker would be the favorite, but Winslow, I would not underestimate him.
Well, I had an interesting discussion with a pollster last week about. Because I wrote a piece about that was suspicious of Brown running for governor, not in the sense that I think he would do badly, but I thinking that he would run for senator, because for one, people see him as a legislator; they don't see him as a executive the way they see Baker, sort of in the sort of the history of that in Massachusetts. But he did point out to me that in a favorability poll, Brown way outpolled Baker and Weld. Well, I don't know. I chalk that up to probably name recognition. Yeah. The fact that Brown has been in the public eye for so long.
Strike me as suitable as gubernatorial candidate.
But Baker has kept a presence in the public eye.
Has
he's done
he?
Television.
Has
he's done radio. He's kept up his email.
I think it's been a very low profile.
He's still been out there. It's not like this guy just went into a cave and sealed it off. Occasionally appeared on radio shows, and he's kept his email list active, and he's been active on social media. He's still engaging.
You must
people.
Be on his list, because I haven't seen it either.
I sign up for every list to get stuff. But
we've had him on here a few times,
and he still goes to every Republican event you can imagine. And I wonder what I think. You know, the potential for a Brown Baker primary in 2014, hypothetically speaking, if something like that happened. I don't think that would be very good for Republicans. I think that could be something like what happened with Malone and Salucci back in the day, because it would just it's really almost two different. There's a lot of overlap and support there. It could be very bloody and nasty for them.
Republicans need some fresh blood. I mean, they're just there's no bench. You're right. I mean,
there is no bench. This is why we're talking about Brown running for governor.
You're talking about a state rep, Dan Winslow, with very low name recognition as a viable Republican candidate in the primary. And
for governor,
Baker,
by the way, not for auditor, not for
governor.
Not for
name recognition.
You know, and Charlie Baker got beat badly once. And now you're talking about William Weld, who quit being governor. I mean, so they just are desperate for some new people that are going to capture the imagination of the Massachusetts voter. Otherwise, it's just going to be Democrats as usual.
Some Republicans, though, don't look at the Democratic field and think it's that strong. I don't know if I buy that, because I think Grossman could be a very good candidate.
Yep.
Well, they can certainly raise money.
Yeah, well, Grossman could raise a lot of money.
And Murray.
But I did get a press release about a week ago from this published. I first got him. I said from this that was touting Dr. Keith Ablow was thinking of running for U.S. Senate, and I'm like, this has to be a joke. And then another journalist forwarded it to me, and I was like, oh my gosh, is this a joke? So I called up the publicist. And I said, is he pulling my leg, or is this serious? And yeah, he's seriously considering getting in the race if Brown or Well
does he live in Massachusetts?
He does. He has a practice in Newburyport. I actually I checked that off. I said, could he run? Does he live here? He's like, yeah, he has a home in Newburyport and Newbury, and yeah, he could run. I don't know. How old is he? Oh, I have no idea. I would be interested to know what his name recognition
is. He's the author. What did he write?
He's a television psychologist type of fella. I don't.
Yeah, I get confused with him and a couple others, but I know the name.
Well, what's intimidating the Republicans is not Grossman or Murray. I think they see them as candidates who could be beat. What's intimidating is the number of Democrats in the state and the state Democratic organization, which really turned out the vote for Warren this time around. So there's an installed base of Democratic activists that's tough to beat in this state.
I think that's why a 2013 special election would be tough for Republicans. Even with a depressed turnout, the Democrats built up this very impressive get out the vote operation, down to the mobile apps that their activists were using. It was very impressive, and they probably could very easily just blow the cobwebs off it and turn it back on for a quick special election.
That's right. They're not going to let what happened in 2010 happen again to
them.
All right. I've been talking with Garrett Quinn. He's the author of the blog Less is More on Boston.com and a regular contributor to Reason magazine, and Jeffrey Berry, professor of political science at Tufts University. Thank you for joining us for Politics as Usual this Monday.
Thanks, Emily.